You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the globe to bring you the latest developments in medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja.
We love the earth.
It's time for the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Now, here's your host, Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Monday, July 3rd, 2017, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the second half of the year. So glad to have you here. And for a lot of you, taking advantage of a five-day federal holiday weekend. Of course, tomorrow, Independence Day here in the United States. I'll be taking the day off to celebrate the 241st year of our birth. And we'll talk a little bit about that in today's Radical Rant and give you some perspective on just how short a timeline marijuana prohibition has been in this country. That's coming up at the end of this first hour. Also on the show today, we have the debut of a brand new segment featuring Americans for Safe Access, the nation's number one organization fighting for patients in the era of marijuana legalization. It's ACE's patient-focused update, and it's coming up today with Dr. Jehan Marku, PhD, who will be talking about ACE's certification program for dispensaries to be able to let patients know their needs are being met, even if it's an adult use or a recreational state. Also coming up on the show today in Drug War Data Mining, we'll take a look at a new study from the Pew Center that says prison does not deter drug use. What a surprise. And in our Canadian Cannabis Chronicle, Renee Gagnon speaks at the Vancouver Hemp Expo that took place last year. We'll give you a little look at that.
Hi,
and we'll be
back
right after this.
Marijuana Agenda.
Putting together the most comprehensive live weekday marijuana news talk program is a full-time job. Now you can do your part to ensure that listener-supported independent cannabis radio journalism can continue by becoming a patron of the Marijuana Agenda. Just log on to MJAgenda.com and click the Become a Patron button. For your $4.20 monthly donation, you'll receive over 20 hours of original first-hour podcasts, plus other materials only available to paid subscribers. Or for just $9.99 a month, become a VIP patron. You'll get over 40 hours of podcasts for the complete program, including Toker Talk Radio, plus ad-free downloads of the segments heard on the Marijuana Agenda. Plus, VIPs get exclusive access to the video replay of the two-hour live stream show and downloads of the spreadsheets and charts I provide from my years of curating marijuana data sets. Thank you for your support, and remember, I cannot do it without you. Please become a patron today at MJAgenda.com.
The Marijuana Agenda, like the Alcohol Agenda. But a lot safer.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal potland Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House.
Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com, City of Portland, permit number 17-159855.
This is your Cannabis Headline News, brought to you by MarijuanaMoment.net, the complete source for all your marijuana news in one morning newsletter from Marijuana Majority founder Tom Angel. Subscribe today for free at MarijuanaMoment.net.
This is your Cannabis Headline News for Monday, July 3rd, 2017. I'm Russ Belville. Associated Press reports that tourists and locals alike were among the more than 100 people waiting in line at one Las Vegas area dispensary Saturday as Nevada became the latest state in the U.S. with stores selling marijuana for recreational purposes. Kristen Danielle got in line outside a pot shop at 5:45 in the morning after a different store that opened at midnight closed before she could make a purchase. She brought a folding chair and sat by the door, striking conversations with the security guard and others as the line continued to grow before doors opened at 9 a.m. State Senator Tick Siegerblum, one of the main proponents of marijuana legalization in Nevada, made the first purchase at the Source dispensary at a strip mall. Daniil and others followed. An hour after the door opened, at least 80 transactions had been recorded. Daniil, age 57, said she has a bipolar disorder and a bad neck. She said she never got a medical card for fear of a federal crackdown on those who provided their information to obtain it. And now she said she no longer has to fear potentially being arrested for possessing marijuana, saying, quote, "I'm going to spend the whole $100," end quote. Denver has finalized rules for the nation's first licensed pot clubs, says Associated Press. To open, clubs first need neighborhood approval. They can't allow indoor smoking or on-site pot sales. Denver voters approved recreational marijuana clubs in November, but a state board banned the sale of alcohol at places allowing pot use. Interested businesses so far have included yoga studios and coffee shops. The Denver Post reports the final rules don't require patrons to sign waivers, stating they are responsible for their own actions and abiding by state law. Denver's law creates a four-year pilot program in which businesses can seek annual permits to create areas where customers can consume their own cannabis. Law allows other businesses to seek permits for one-time pot consumption events. Massachusetts House and Senate negotiators hoping to hammer out a compromise over the state's recreational marijuana law failed to meet a self-imposed deadline Friday aimed at getting a final bill to Republican Governor Charlie Baker's desk and plan to get back to negotiations next week, reports Associated Press. A six-member conference committee shed little light on its discussions while meeting off and on behind closed doors with little apparent progress Friday. While lawmakers from both chambers had called for changes to the law that legalized adult use of recreational marijuana, the House and Senate took dramatically different approaches. The House voted to repeal the law and replace it with a more expansive bill that bumped the tax rate on retail marijuana sales from a maximum 12% to a required 28%. The measure also gave local governing bodies, such as city councils and select boards, authority to ban pot shops from opening within their communities. The Senate voted to keep the current law in place with more modest revisions. The Senate bill held the tax rate at 12% and kept the power to prohibit marijuana stores in the hands of voters. A groom donned a bud of marijuana in his coat pocket as he and his bride said, "I do," inside a Las Vegas facility growing the drug that's newly legal to buy, according to Associated Press. Anna Balfe Taylor said she had to think about it when Mark Balfe Taylor asked her to marry him inside a grow house, but eventually supported it. However, neither of them will be smoking what was in the groom's pocket Saturday, the same day Nevada launched recreational pot sales. The two were sober and say they plan to stay that way. The couple said a grow house wedding was more about supporting Nevada's new marijuana laws. Mark Balfe Taylor says his father was once imprisoned because of a marijuana-related offense, so the issue has always been personal for him. The Denver Post reports on Colorado entrepreneurs Matt and Leslie Bodenchuk, who manufacture a wildly successful accessory for pot smokers Bic lighters called the Toker Poker. On Wednesday, Colorado's attorney general and state and federal law enforcement agencies announced they had snuffed out the largest illegal marijuana trafficking ring since recreational pot was legalized in the state, dubbed Operation Toker Poker. Officials told the media, the same name as the Bodenchuk's smoking accessory. Now, the Bodenchuk's estimate they'll have to spend $20,000 to $50,000 for the search engine optimization to return their product to the top of Google's search engine rankings. This has been your Cannabis Headline News for Monday, July 3rd, 2017. I'm Russ Belville.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
If you work in the cannabis industry, consume marijuana, or just support freedom, you need to know about breaking policy news that affects you. Marijuana Moment is the daily newsletter that helps you stay on top of all the latest and most important state, federal, and international cannabis developments. Brought to you by longtime legalization activist Tom Angel, Marijuana Moment puts a concise yet comprehensive overview of cannabis news in your inbox early every weekday morning. Wake up to Marijuana Moment and rest assured you'll be ready for the cannabis news that's driving the day. Subscribe now at marijuanamoment.net.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for Cultivator's Corner with Jorge Cervantes from MarijuanaGrowing.com. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
The marijuana agenda, like the pharmaceutical agenda, without all the side effects, overdose deaths, you know, insurance.
Side effects may include nausea, dry mouth, and constipation. Dry mouth, constipation, indigestion, and abdominal pain.
Which can occur without warning and may cause death.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Welcome to ACE's patient-focused update. Almost every U.S. state now recognizes some form of cannabis as medicine. But since 1971, the federal government has steadfastly denied the medical benefits of herbal cannabis. Americans for Safe Access is the nation's leading organization fighting for the rights of all patients who use cannabis as medicine. Join us now for another edition of ACE's patient-focused update. Welcome, everyone, to this inaugural episode of ACE's Patient-Focused Update, the podcast for Americans for Safe Access. I'm Russ Belville, and joining us today for the episode, we have Dr. Jehan Marku. He's the Chief Science Officer for Americans for Safe Access. And Dr. Marku, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here today.
It's great having you on because we've wanted to have Americans for Safe Access be a part of the marijuana agenda to get a broader understanding of what the issues are for medical cannabis patients. We don't want to leave behind the patients as we move into this new era of marijuana legalization. So for people that come to this from the recreational or adult use side, tell them what Americans for Safe Access is all about.
So Americans for Safe Access was founded in 2002 with the mission to ensure safe and legal access to cannabis for therapeutic and research purposes. And we helped pass some of the few distribution laws in the country in the beginning. So in Oakland, California, around 2002, we helped pass those laws that allowed collectives to form. And in going out there and moving this more into the mainstream, we were told we needed standards. We needed a monograph. We needed training and certification for businesses. We needed to start self-regulating our operations because in 2002 there were maybe 11 dispensaries in the entire country, 11 cannabis businesses that were servicing patients in the entire country. And today there are thousands. And it presents a problem for patients because the adult use market doesn't always serve the needs of a patient who might need different products, different information about how to use products, different delivery methods that may not be popular. And so we have continued to represent patients out there. We are the largest grassroots national organization which represents patients' rights for medical cannabis.
That's fantastic. And yeah. Folks have also picked up on Americans for Safe Access back in the darker days when we were suffering many of these raids from the federal authorities. ASA, I recall, put together fantastic event awareness and protests and court support. So I've been well aware of what Americans for Safe Access has done for the patient community, and it's incredibly valuable. And I'm glad, Dr. Marku, that you bring up that even though we've got this burgeoning adult use market, it doesn't serve the same needs as what patients might require. And that brings us to this great initiative you guys have put forth, this project for what's called patient-focused certification. Can you tell our listeners about that?
That is a very interesting project we've been working on for the last couple of years. And so ASA has worked with big institutions. We've worked with the American Herbal Products Association. We've worked with the American Herbal Pharmacopeia. And we created a set of standards for products and how businesses operate that were rapidly adopted by 20 states as the skeleton of their regulatory framework. And so we created patient-focused certification to certify groups to standards, often standards that go above and beyond what the state requires. Like, not all states require full testing of the material to meet botanical safety requirements before it's distributed. Many states, and so we started certifying businesses as being compliant with standards which would qualify cannabis as a botanical medicine through with the help of other institutions. And so patient-focused certification, or PFC, has one arm, which is we can go in and do inspections and assessments of cannabis cultivators, manufacturers, laboratories, and dispensing operations. We also have state contracts to do this. And so not only are we training industry and sending inspectors to assess their operations, we're actually also working with state governments and training their program administrators. Like, I've gone on ride-alongs with Department of Health to go and do joint inspections of cannabis operations. I've written the checklists that assessors or auditors use or inspectors use to go into these operations for state governments. And so we're thinking, you know, much like being prepared for a raid was a, still continues to be an issue, but was a really, really big issue up until about 2010 with the passage of the CJS amendment. You know, being prepared for regulatory inspections is now the new way to be prepared for not getting shut down. Because if they come to your place and they find problems, they find that workers are exposed to dangerous conditions or pathogens, they will heavily fine you and potentially come back with guns and shut down the place. Like we've seen with the raw food thing, you know, they came with thermometers, checked the raw milk, and then came back with guys with guns and confiscated all the products and money for unsafe products. And so, you know, it's a different form of being prepared. And so, you know, we offer these services to the industry to meet this PFC standard. And we're the only group out there that will provide advising, training, and certification where the money goes directly back to the community. You know, the money doesn't go to, you know, we're a nonprofit. And so all the funds go to things like suing the DEA to change incorrect information, to passing the CJS amendment every year to defund the activities in states with cannabis programs. Because not a lot of people know this, is that there's an amendment that has to be passed every year with a fiscal budget. Otherwise, the DEA has the money and authority to go in and do raids again. We've been in kind of a beautiful bubble where we haven't had to worry about that. But it's folks like our activists and our patients who are helping to pass a lot of this legislation, expand access. It was the local DC ASA chapter, which basically, like you said, we did protests, we did lobbying, we spoke with our elected officials, and we got the condition list removed. Like, it's one of the things that ACE has been going into states after they pass laws that aren't really addressing patient needs, as we help expand them and change them for the better. And through PFC, we also offer training now, and we've had some really interesting partners come on board. Right now, for the first time ever, cannabis training is offered through a school of pharmacy online. So you can go to University of Maryland, Center for Innovative Pharmacy Solutions, their school of pharmacy, and take our cannabis training. And what is really remarkable is that even our federal law enforcement, our RAID training, is up there. And so you can go and take our core cannabis requirements, learn about the history of the regulations, learn about the federal conflict, but also you're approached with education in terms of you're going to be like distributing the cannabis to people. It's really a new time where the first time ever we're seeing accredited institutions, we're seeing people who are responsible or accountable for the quality of education and training in the cannabis industry. Because before, it was like everyone was offering training. You can go to any website from a company in California and there's some sort of training you can attend, but there's no real a person who's held accountable for the quality or outcomes of that education. And so that's why we've partnered with groups like the University of Maryland, like Harvard University, and other groups to provide patient, doctor, and industry education through a patient-focused approach. And that's why we call it patient-focused certifications, because it's based on voluntary consensus standards developed by stakeholders in the medical cannabis industry and in the hemp industry as well on how best to address people who may be trying to, say, manage their chronic pain, and they need much more precise dosing or precise or alternative administration routes. You know, a lot of people joke about Obviously, inhaling cannabis is very effective. However, some people, that may not be the most effective means for them. There might be more like sublingual or rectal administration is also becoming very popular. And we have to keep our minds open because that's not what I would call, you know, those are definitely products that have been around for a while in the scientific literature and shown some benefit. And so I think patients probably need, a wider variety of options and formulations when it comes to accessing their medicine, and perhaps held to a slightly higher standard in terms of microbes. You know, most of us, you know, if we go to the grocery store, we eat an apple without thinking about the fungus that's probably on there. And so in keeping in mind that this is a botanical product, and it's not going to, as an agricultural product, it'll never be 100% free of all bacteria. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, there's good bacteria, there's bad bacteria. And we have to just make sure that these things are within certain limits that maintain their qualifications. And requires, you know, evidence is the big thing now, too. With certification and staying open, in the past, you used to never keep documents. You know, I'm not going to keep a batch record of the cannabis I grew. but that was... that was a risky thing to do, sure. Is to have, you know, run it like a legitimate business. But now you have to do that. Like, you have to prove batch records. If you say you're producing cannabis and your cannabis is the best and no one produces cannabis like you produce cannabis, you better have some scientifically sound reports that show testing, batch record control, what you applied to the plant, how you cultivated it. Otherwise, if it's not documented, it's not happening. And I think that that's a harsh reality for people. You know, I see, I saw a $280,000 fine from OSHA because a cannabis cultivation site could not produce a standard operating procedure for something they were doing within 4 hours. They just did not have the paperwork. And that's a big, you know, those are the types of things we're trying to avoid is with patient-focused certification is folks now, for instance, hire us also to come and do regulatory inspections for them. Like, hey, we're going to have an inspection next week. Can you send one of your auditors here to walk through our facility and point out things that we might need to approve or be ready to address. And a lot of times, you know, you have to remember that a lot of the successful cannabis businesses that have been around may have never had a regulatory inspection before. You know, in some states there could be 300-400 cannabis operations and 2 people at the program tasked with monitoring all of them. Right. And so I think if you've never had a regulatory inspection before, you should think about that. And if you had have one before, you should think about why you had it before. And if you don't know, that's a big issue. You should also be very aware of what challenges you're going to face if they were to say we're coming next week to look at your facility. You know, and that's, for example, we're teaching tonight and we'll be posting it to YouTube is a webinar about what to expect when you're being inspected. How do these investigators think? How do they gather their information? How do they chart a map to go into your facility? And understanding that can help you be much more prepared. Just like with a raid, you know, a potentially chaotic and negative situation can go much more smoothly and have a best possible outcome if you're prepared and trained appropriately.
Well, you can get this training, folks, at Americans for Safe Access. The website is safeaccessnow.org. And for the patient-focused certification, there's a couple of websites here, patientfocusedcertification.org or pfctraining.org. Those take you to the same place, doctor?
So patient-focused certification is for operations. So if you're a cultivator, laboratory, manufacturer, packaging, labeling, holding, that sort of thing, you go to patientfocusedcertification.org and you can enroll and apply for a non-committal quote for what we can do to for your business to reach a higher standard. And the pfctraining.org goes directly to our training site through the University of Maryland School of Pharmacy. And what's great about that training is it is designed to meet state requirements in every state. Like Ohio and other groups require that training be approved through boards of pharmacies or things like that. And so the pfctraining.org is really a unique tool. And if you're already a PFC client, you get a massive discount. I think it's like 50% off of the price of training. And we're going to have trainings are going to be added to that too August 15th and by October 1st. we're going to be adding a ton more training. So, you know, by the end of August, you should be able to go onto that site and actually get trained to be a cannabis inspector or assessor. And so we have the staff trainings up. We have some management trainings you can take on quality control and things like that, integrative pest management, which is a very popular topic, as well as sustainable cultivation. And the sort of crown jewel of that's going to be is we can train people to be internal and external inspectors. If you want to be someone who makes sure that cannabis is safe for patients, I mean, this is a really amazing educational program that hasn't existed before with the sponsorship of a major university.
That's great. Thank you, Dr. Jehan Marcu. He's the Chief Science Officer for Americans for Safe Access. The website, safeaccessnow.org. Also check out patientfocuscertification.org and pfctraining.org. Dr. Marcu, thank you for being here for ACE's patient-focused update. We appreciate it.
Thank you. And we'll be back next week or the next show with some research highlights and updates about our opioid actions for the summer. We're trying to spread some awareness about how cannabis can help with the opiate crisis.
All right. Well, we'll help you spread that news. Thank you so much, and thank you for being here on ACE's Patient-Focused Update.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. MJAgenda.com.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm astonished to hear people suggest we can solve our heroin crisis. Have you heard this? By having more marijuana.
Okay, maybe you're a little high.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Putting together the most comprehensive live weekday marijuana news talk program is a full-time job. Now you can do your part to ensure that listener-supported independent cannabis radio journalism can continue by becoming a patron of the Marijuana Agenda. Just log on to MJAgenda.com and click the Become a Patron button. If you're an organization or business looking to promote your brand, we have sponsorship patronage available at MJAgenda.com. Sponsorship includes 15 and 30 second ad breaks and 6-minute interviews on the podcast, depending on sponsorship level, which begins at $19.99 a month. Thank you for your support, and remember, I cannot do it without you. Please become a patron today at MJAgenda.com.
Promoting the end of adult cannabis prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It's even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more on this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Today in the Data Mines, we have a new study coming from the Pew Charitable Trusts. The study is entitled, Pew Analysis Finds No Relationship Between Drug Imprisonment and Drug Problems. It's a letter that they've put forth, given that President Trump has appointed an opioids commission to investigate the opioid overdose crisis we have in this country. They've put together a letter with data on the 50 states and how their rates of imprisonment for people using drugs have nothing to do with the overdose rates, with the arrest rates it basically flies in the face of what Chris Christie and what Jeff Sessions have said when it comes to the marijuana with the opiate crisis that we've got going on here. According to the report, Pew's analysis found no statistically significant relationship between states' drug offender imprisonment rates and three measures of drug problems. One, the rates of illicit drug use. And this was just illicit drugs, not counting marijuana. So it's not confounded by the legalization of marijuana that's taking place in eight states so far. The second thing they analyzed was overdose deaths. And the third thing they analyzed was drug arrests. And according to Pew, these findings reinforce previous research that cast doubt on the theory that stiffer prison terms deter drug use and related crimes. For example, Louisiana had the country's highest drug offender imprisonment rate in 2014, with 226.4 drug offenders in prison per 100,000 residents. In contrast, Massachusetts' rate was one of the lowest at 30.2 per 100,000 residents, less than one-seventh of Louisiana's rate. As Pew's letter explained, higher rates of drug imprisonment do not translate into lower rates of drug use, fewer drug arrests, or fewer overdose deaths. And these findings hold true even when you control for demographic variables such as education level, employment, race, and median household income. Now, they looked at the rates all across the country, and of course, Louisiana coming in at 226.4 in its imprisonment rate. And we compared that, as mentioned, to Massachusetts. And what we find is that Massachusetts, with its 30.2 imprisonment rate, compared to 226 for Louisiana, but the drug overdose rate is 19.1 in Massachusetts and 16.7 in Louisiana, not much different. The arrest rate, far more arrests in Louisiana, 380 compared to 155 for Massachusetts, but the use rate is higher in Louisiana, 3,508 compared to 2,740. So despite Massachusetts only arresting 30 per 100,000 compared to the 220 some odd per 100,000, you still have more drug use in the state of Louisiana. And this is, again, from all comparison rates of per 100,000 people. We'll put this link in our chat room, and you can visit it and find out your state. They've got an interactive state map where you can click on a few, you know, one or two or more states and compare them to one another. The map is also color-coded in shades of blue compared to how much how much drug use rate or whatever it is you're looking on the map. So it's easy to pick out which states are the ones you'll want to compare. Again, that's at the Pew Charitable Trust. You can find it online at pewtrusts.org. That's pewtrusts.org in their research and analysis segment. We've also got a link on their front page.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association and the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Federal prosecutors have been ordered to pursue the toughest possible sentences for criminal suspects. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions issued a memo May 10th rolling back Obama-era reforms that eased sentencing for some nonviolent drug offenders. Anthony Papa is the manager of media and artist relations for the Drug Policy Alliance. Papa says Sessions' reinstatement of harsher sentencing policies will destroy families because the breadwinners will be locked up for extensive periods of time.
Not only is going to put people with drug problems away that should be treated medically, not punitively, he's going to affect many family members of those that are being incarcerated.
The National Association of Assistant United States Attorneys says the policy will, quote, restore the tools that Congress intended to punish drug suspects. For United News International, I'm Neela Uni.
You're not high. You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
It's not recreational. It can be destructive, and it consistently is destructive.
Okay, maybe you're a little high.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for Cannabis Sports Medicine from the Gridiron Cannabis Coalition. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Welcome to the Canadian Cannabis Chronicle. With the election of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, Canada is poised to become the second nation in the world and the first in the Northern Hemisphere to legalize adult use of cannabis. Learn more about the fight to free the pot leaf in the land of the maple leaf. It's time for the Canadian Cannabis Chronicle. Welcome to the Canadian Cannabis Chronicle. I'm Russ Belville. On today's program, we bring you back to the Vancouver Cannabis Hemp Expo that took place last July, and we hear from Renee Gagnon, a world-renowned expert on cannabis policy and government issues, speaking to the assembled audience at the expo. Enjoy.
A lifelong cannabis enthusiast, she was given the opportunity in 2013 to apply for and become Canadian MMPR License 005, taking the company public 6 months later, becoming the world's first female public cannabis company CEO. After exiting in 2015, Renee has focused on cannabis supply chain management. Welcome, Renee.
Thank you very much. So in 2014, we were awarded MMPR 005, which was an interesting experience and gave us a chance to experience what the government at the time had dictated would be the leading edge of their new cannabis strategy. I want to talk specifically about the differences between the marketplace in Canada and in the United States and some of the key major differences between what's going on. If you look at the United States, they have, in Canada, we have a federal medical program. In the United States, they don't have a federal program except a limited one started way back in the 70s. They've left it up to individual states. In Canada, the LPs have access to banking, the dispensaries don't. And in the United States, nobody within the cannabis sector has access to legitimate banking, which means that you have problems on raising capital and being able to pay your bills. You've got issues on zoning. Zoning has become now one of the biggest inhibiting factors in California, with most of the pre-zoned property that was available for production being speculated on. And zoning tends to be an Achilles heel in any of the programs, and it's usually one of the most not looked at. And there's a lot of jurisdictions that proactively banned dispensaries from existing years ago, and you have to start at the lobbying level now and continue forward. The biggest difference is that there is some federal support in Canada, zero federal support in the United States, and that ties into governance on product manufacturing, labeling, as we move towards legalization. Canada is an incredibly complicated and mixed up patchwork. We've got a combination of compassion clubs, dispensaries, licensed producers. The relationship between a patient and their doctor gets confused. You can't send them in their traditional direction towards a pharmacy. You have to direct them in two different directions, either to an LP or to a dispensary if they have products that you can't get from an LP. The problem is once you start looking at the dispensaries, you've got for-profit, you've got non-profit. And the non-profit are typically run as compassion societies, and then the profit dispensaries are, again, in there for as a business method. The difficulty is there's no direct path for physicians to be able to prescribe the products that they want to the patients they want without having to channel the patient in either the gray or the black area or force them to go to the LP market. The biggest difference is going to be coming forward is that as different players want to start entering this, such as liquor distribution, private liquor, other various forms, it's going to make the area more difficult for patients to figure out how they can obtain their product and how they plan to move on. The big difference. In the United States, this market has been viewed with unbridled capitalism. Everywhere you go, people are putting down their money to create products and companies that we don't see here. It's been advancing so fast, you're starting to see companies producing terpene pucks, flavoring combinations, things that are very nuanced in the product level that we don't hear. But on both sides of the border, nobody's paying attention to the big things that will kill you later on, which come down to packaging, labeling, compliance, production standards. The United States is way farther ahead on almost every form of non-medicinal marijuana. Canada's got an advantage only by having a national program that's at least universally accessible Canada-wide. Revenue-wise, you see in the States, though, the recreational market is zooming, and it's going to be exceedingly gapping the medical. And then in states like Washington State, they collapse the medical, so this chart no longer applies. Canada, we've essentially got an oligopoly. You don't have unrestrained competition. You've got 31 licensed producers. You've got approximately anywhere from 400 to 500 dispensaries. You've got tens of thousands of MAR producers. You've got home growers. You've got an entire ecosystem Canada-wide that isn't represented by the 31 companies. Patient growth has been continuous, but not spectacular. And when you look at the actual sales numbers coming in from the LPs, the top five take approximately 80% of the patient load. That's a very, very thin amount of traffic for the remaining LPs. Makes it very complicated, makes it very regulated, and in order to play within this space, your starting level of getting in is starting at 5 million, going upwards of 10 million before approval. That leads into some other problems. So, cost of compliance. This is one of the biggest arguments I get in Canada, is that because it's voluntary, we don't have any regulations for the folks outside the LP stack, it comes down to, do I have to? What's the point of this? Is there really any cost in it? Well, the cost of not complying is staggering. In Colorado, a non-compliance event could cost you $20,000 an incident. We haven't started seeing in Canada, Health Canada fining people for labeling, but they have the ability to level tens of thousands of dollars per incident per fine. And that is only going to escalate as they find themselves more frustrated through the traditional means of punishing people. They're going to start going to the other methods, which includes mislabeling. It includes accidentally mislabeling it. It means not putting lot numbers on it. And if you don't know what a lot number is, you've already got yourself down the creek there. Compliance has an expense, yes, but the cost of not complying is up to three times whatever it is you didn't do in the first place. The biggest problem among the MMPR, if anybody's done it or if you've been in it, the compliance burden is staggering. The people that you need to dedicate to specifically managing compliance is excessive. You can't have one QA working in three facilities. You have to have a QA for every one. And this means that you've got hiring problems. You've got issues of where you're built. The ability to just destroy garbage would make you think of decommissioning Soviet nuclear stockpiles. It's unnecessary, but it does exist. And the problem is you can choose to not comply and hope to get along, or you can start investigating what the simple compliance is that will help you get you through this next stage. It's not all about bank vaults and security cameras. It's actually more to do with paperwork. And if you're not into paperwork, this is not a good industry for you. Rich White Guy Club. That's kind of the problem. And what the central sort of under threat for the dispensary industry in Canada and North America wide. The cost of getting into the LP business, as I said, is anywhere from $3 to $10 million. And that pretty much excludes 99.9% of women and minorities. To my way of thinking, the dispensary model is the only affordable, out-of-the-box solution that allows more people to participate with a greater spread of economic starting point. And then we let Darwin decide. The thing about retail and capitalism is that the customers always eventually decide who are the ones that they prefer. They go to the stores they prefer. They buy the brands they prefer. Once you set up an oligopoly or a monopoly where you say you may only buy from the following, it inevitably will create a back. We already buy from the black market. I spent 30 years buying from the black market before there was a legal source. Most of the people here did because there wasn't LPs. They're not going to go away. The question is, how do we legitimize it? How do we bring it forward? And how do we bring that productive capacity into the overall? And the only way to do it is to bring them higher up towards the LPs. We can't bring them down. And again, on the minority issues, we have to remember that in the United States specifically, minorities paid the heaviest price for the drug war. In Canada, it was also the same when you look at Aboriginal incarceration. And when we look at economic impact, this industry is zero right now. We're just starting. We can choose to ignore equality and diversity and hope it'll all figure out later, but I can guarantee you it won't happen. Because the system won't do it voluntarily. If we want women and minorities to be involved in cannabis in a significant fashion, it has to start now, and we can't do it by automatically defaulting to a massive corporate model. It automatically makes it a rich white guy club. But my real reason that we need to interfere less. We believe in capitalism, supposedly. We believe in a free market, supposedly. We believe in retail, supposedly. But on this subject, it's somewhere between nuclear radiation and evil. And the problem is that isn't the way it works. When you want to buy bread, you don't mail order it and wait a month. When you want milk, you don't mail order it and wait a month. You want to walk into a store like an adult, a competent human being, show your ID, put down money, buy what you want, and walk out without the judgment of society on you. And this is where we need to head, regardless of what the government wants, regardless of what activists want, regardless of what corporations want. The public wants to buy weed, they want to do it in a store, and they don't want to feel like criminals, and it behooves all of us to work on making that happen. Control's an illusion on this product. It pre-existed humans. It's pre-existed every civilization that's legalized or made it illegal. It's predated all of us in this room. It doesn't matter how old you are in this room. You weren't here first. It was. And as long as we keep fighting each other on who was here longer, who was bigger, who raised the most money, who's the most organic, the other side gets to divide us, conquer us, and ignore us. We're all in cannabis, we're all working on cannabis, and there is no right way. The plant predates us all. So on that note, I want to say thank you, and I want you to ponder that whatever you're doing right now, do more. Don't wait for the government to approve you. Don't wait for the city council to approve you. We're all doing it. Do it simultaneously. We all advance together at the same time. They can't stop it.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. MJAgenda.com.
Belville from the Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop.
Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
This November, whether you see the words medical marijuana on your ballot or not, the issue is there. From the halls of Congress to your state capitol or city hall, politicians are already making decisions on medical marijuana policy on your behalf. This election, make sure they are representing you. Every vote is a vote for medical marijuana.
Visit votemedicalmarijuana.org today.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for a cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine from the Burning Issues podcast on CannabisRadio.com. Learn more at MJAgenda.com/about.
Total war against public enemy public number one.
10 federal criminal penalties for up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs. Use less
I am
drugs.
That was the point.
I think it would be a mistake to leave a state.
Negative reports coming out of Colorado.
Good people don't smoke marijuana.
Well, today is July 3rd, so we'll be off tomorrow celebrating our nation's Independence Day here in the United States. Our country turns 241 years old, celebrating the July 4th, 1776 signing of the Declaration of Independence. And every year that July 4th rolls around, it reminds me of why we sit here every day researching, writing, and talking about ending adult marijuana prohibition. The first thing we should realize is what an outlier this prohibition is in American history. For the 241 years of our existence, marijuana has only been prohibited for 80 of them. The Marijuana Tax Act, the federal act that first prohibited cannabis, was signed in October of 1937. We're approaching the 80th anniversary of marijuana prohibition. So that means it's less than one-third of the time we've officially been a country has marijuana been prohibited. Of course, if we date back to prior to 1776, prior to the signing of the Declaration of Independence, when we were British colonies, the first colonies in Virginia in 1611 were mandated by the king to cultivate hemp for the empire, for the British Empire, for their sails, for their rigging, and for many other uses. It was required of the Virginia colonists to grow hemp. If we look at it that way, 1611, that means we are at 406 years on this continent where our forefathers have been cultivating and harvesting cannabis. Well, our forefathers and the Africans they had enslaved to do that work. Regardless, over four centuries, we've had the use of cannabis hemp on this continent. So for longer than a third of our existence, if you want to go all the way back to the colonies, has our right to cultivate cannabis been taken away from us, been stolen from us? Our hemp heritage has been denied us by our federal government. When we talk about this issue, many people get this confused by thinking of it as a drug, as referencing the Controlled Substances Act, and assuming that the federal government has some sort of right to dictate what drugs we cultivate, what plants we cultivate, and how we may use them. While that's the established law today and has been recognized by our Supreme Court in a number of decisions, I do not recognize those decisions as valid. I offer as much support for the decisions that make marijuana illegal in this country at a federal level as I do the old Dred Scott decision that said it was okay to own slaves and that we could reimburse people for the property they had lost, etc. I accord the decisions that make marijuana illegal in this country with the same decisions that allowed separate but equal to exist in our country. I record them the same respect I give the decisions that allowed sodomy laws to exist in this country. Laws that banned same-sex marriage, banned interracial marriage, banned black people from going into certain public facilities. Just because something's legal now doesn't mean it will always be legal. Just because we have a certain recognition of precedent and law in this country doesn't mean it will always be that way. And I believe that in jurisprudence, we will look back. Within 50 years, we'll look back at the decisions that allowed this cannabis prohibition to continue and find them to be as absurd and as much a mockery of justice and a misunderstanding of our Constitution and a fight against our more perfect union as any of those previous decisions I mentioned. Keep in mind that the whole support, the whole basis of the Controlled Substances Act is the Commerce Clause of the United States Constitution. The Commerce Clause with the Constitution, of course, came later than 1776, came in the 1780s when we start getting the Constitution written. The Commerce Clause was to give the federal government the power to regulate the commerce between the states. But our federal government and our Supreme Court have decided that the federal government can regulate things that are non-commercial, that do not transact between the states because of the possibility that they might affect interstate commerce. Now, Justice Thomas was one of the justices that dissented in those Supreme Court cases and said, if we allow the Commerce Clause to say that a California woman using California marijuana for her medical condition is covered under the Commerce Clause, then anything is covered under the Commerce Clause. And he was absolutely right. There is no interstate commerce involved in someone's personal cultivation of cannabis on their own property. If they're not selling it, they're using it for their own purposes. The federal government has no jurisdiction. And the decisions that say they do are wrong and shall be judged wrong by history. In fact, I would say that our right to cultivate and consume cannabis predates our Constitution. It is one of our inalienable rights. It is mentioned by our forefathers when they wrote in our Declaration of Independence and signed it 241 years ago tomorrow that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Among these, that's not all the rights. We have plenty of inalienable rights granted to us by our Creator, but among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And when it comes to cannabis, we know how cannabis can extend life, can lead to better life. As far as liberty, we know how people's liberty have been taken because of cannabis prohibition. And pursuit of happiness, what could be more indicative of the pursuit of happiness than smoking an herb that makes you mellow and happy? And furthermore, I believe our founding fathers recognized that right, even without enumerating it. For they wrote in the Ninth Amendment to our Constitution, "The enumeration in this Constitution of certain rights is not meant to deny or disparage others retained by the people." Just because they wrote down an enumerated set of rights, the right to free speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of religion, free press, bear arms, right to not have unreasonable search and seizures, right to not suffer cruel and unusual punishments. That among these rights, just because we wrote those rights down, doesn't mean those are all of the rights. And I cannot countenance any understanding of our country's founding where those men wouldn't believe we had an inalienable right to cultivate crops on our own land. They were an agrarian society. They had been mandated to grow hemp. They could pay their taxes in hemp. You cannot tell me that the men that wrote that Constitution wouldn't have thought
Cultivation of hemp was an inalienable right. That the cultivation of crops on one's own private land was an area the federal government did not belong. We have gone far apace from the original idea of a limited and enumerated federal government. And nowhere is that more clear than in the one-third of our nation's history that we have gone against the clear meaning of our Constitution and our Commerce Clause in banning cannabis. It's a crime against humanity, it's a crime against nature, and it's a crime against our American heritage. Remember that as you're celebrating this Independence Day. Happy 4th of July to everyone. We'll see you on Wednesday, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
You think you're free, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it.